Welcome to the Sustainability Coffee, the podcast of IMC Krems all about sustainability. In this podcast, we regularly talk to various people connected to our university, staff members, professors, students, and external partners about their perspectives and experiences with sustainability. This is already the third season of our podcast. My name is Victoria Engelmeier, and among other things, I'm responsible for gender diversity and sustainability. Welcome to a new episode of our podcast and to a very special guest, someone who is still a relatively new face at IMC Krems, Karl-Michael Höferl. Welcome and thank you for accepting my invitation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Would you like to briefly introduce yourself and tell us about your role at IMC Krems?
Yeah, so my name is Karl-Michael Höferl at IMC Krems. I have a dual role. On the one hand, I'm the program director for the bachelor program Sustainability Management. And my second role is to be the head of Institute for Sustainability and Circular Economy.
Wow, so a sustainability pro.
Kind of.
Okay, listen, Karl-Michael, I have prepared a special format for you because there is an enormous amount of knowledge, but also misconceptions about sustainability. And that's why I have prepared 10 myths about sustainability, and I would like you to briefly share your thoughts on each one. All right?
Okay, give it a try.
Okay. So the first thing is sustainability is all about giving things up.
Just a little digression. So this means we are sustainability busters. We're debunking sustainability myths.
Exactly, like the Mythbusters. Do you know
like
them?
Like the Mythbusters. Yeah.
Have you seen them? Yeah.
But we don't. Actually, we don't sell merch, don't we?
No, not yet.
Not yet. Okay. I get it. Okay. Back to the story. It means to give something up.
Would you agree with that?
You mean it's not fun?
Somehow.
Yeah. It depends on your perspective. If you're coming from an hyper-consumerism perspective, I would say, yes, this might be the case because you might not end up buying the newest, shiniest iPhone every half year or whatever the release cycles are or whatever consumer product you want to insert here. So from this perspective, yes, it might mean that you stick to old stuff and as long as it's working, you're using it and that's it. So from such a consumerism-driven perspective, yes, this might be a valid perception. Yeah, but also giving up means not doing something or missing out on something, and this could also be deliberating at some kind of point. So, for example, my family we moved homes last week. I'm not going to move home anytime soon because I hate it, but I figured out that I own so much stuff that I really don't need. And at some point, I have the feeling that the stuff owns you because you have to take care of it and so on and so on. So not doing stuff or getting stuff also can be liberating for, not being owned by stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So a classical yes and no.
Perfect. So let's see what you think about number two.
By the way, have we debunked it? Not really.
No.
Do we have sound effects? Yeah. Let's put it on a draw.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go for a draw. Okay.
Perfect. Okay. Maybe now an easy question. I don't know. A vegan diet is always more environmentally friendly. And don't talk about avocados now.
Did you put it on it because you shifted to a vegan diet?
Yeah.
Okay. But let me reflect the question to you. Since you have real firsthand information, because I'm not on a vegan diet. I'm kind of a flexitarian. I'm on a flexitarian diet.
I mean, I'm not doing it like for a very long time, but I think, as always, it depends on what you eat. Because if you eat like all the time avocado something, I wouldn't say that this is like environmentally friendly. But if you go with regional food, with, I don't know, vegetables and fruits that are probably from nearby, I would say it's more environmentally friendly. And what I don't know is, and that's why I put it on my list, like eating meat, for example, I have heard that this has a lot of CO2 emissions. And I'm not sure if you compare it, even if you would eat like some avocados in your vegan diet, but is the avocado CO2 emission still higher than if you would consume meat? Do you know, like, if you compare both of that?
It's difficult to say because it really depends how it's produced.
Yeah.
So, and there we are back to the question, is it regional or not, and so on. But I think it's, I would say a vegetarian diet, it definitely outsources the classical or outpaces. If we follow this kind of monocausal view on just focusing on CO2 emissions, because that's quite easy to calculate, yeah, and to estimate. Again, we know the answer. The answer would be to drop meat, because meat, as you said, is very CO2 intensive.
Yeah.
So yeah, from a climate mitigation point of view, we would be definitely an enhancement. Also from a public health perspective, because in Austria, on average, we eat too much meat.
Yeah.
We eat it too often, and also heavily processed meat. I can't the Wurstsemmel, which yeah.
Is it your favorite food?
Yeah, I have to admit that it's since we moved last week, we decided for our boys to have a Leberkässemmel.
Yeah,
and I'm able to eat a Leberkässemmel once or twice a year. Then I really like the taste of it, but it's kind of, yeah. Don't overthink it. What are you right now eating and how it was produced and so on and so forth. But coming back to your question. Again, it depends how you implement it. Because, for example, if you switch meat with soy, then it's really depending what kind of soy are you using. Because mm-hmm. if you're using, you know, the Amazonas soy, yeah, which is basically Roundup Ready soy. So this is soy which was produced, and now it's now they I think they're called now by called Bayer Crop Science, before they were Monsanto.
Okay.
And they are, that's a genetically modified version of the soy plant, which is immune to a certain fungicide, which they sell in a package. So it's Roundup. So it's Roundup Ready soy. And this has also devastating effects on the local farming structures there and so on and so forth. And of course, on the CO2 footprint and so on. So basically, of course, from the short cited consumer perspective, I have meat, which is bad, and then I have the non-meat version, which is good.
That would be too simple.
Yeah, I think that's way too simple. But nonetheless, I think a non-meat based diet would definitely be an improvement. Although I'm still struggling with it. As I said, I'm a flexitarian. My wife, she's vegetarian, and I think it's also that's what I said at the beginning. What's the standard? I mean, growing up in Austria, I grew up by being served Hirn mit Ei and this kind of stuff. So
really?
so coming from I would say the meaty end of the argument.
Would you like to translate it for our English?
Oh, what's Hirn mit Ei? It's brain with egg. So it's basically the brain of pigs, I think it is. Yeah, hopefully pigs. And you mix it up with egg. So it's basically scrambled egg with brain in it.
How does it taste? Because I guess that not many listeners will have.
Kind of blocked it out of my memory.
Okay.
But I still remember that the brain was in a glass bowl and was swimming in there, and I could put a finger on top of it. wonderful memories from the past. No,
traumatized.
I think it's the same like with Blunzen. It's not that bad once you have it in your mouth, but it's nonetheless from the outset it's kind of a weird idea. So And I think it's, again, coming down where you're from and what's the standard in the country where you're living. Millions of people are living vegan or billions of people are living on a vegetarian diet without any problems.
Yeah.
So it's a question of transforming standards in a positive way, pointing out, and again, the benefit, because the standard question is what's in there for me? I mean, you can be altruistic as much as you like, but if we talk about transforming societies and all this kind of blah, 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 there must be something in there for you. Be just the altruistic thought, but also benefits for your personal health. And as already stated, it's definitely an improvement if you eat less meat, or also for your personal health.
Now, really an easy question, I swear. Fast fashion can also be sustainable. The answer can also be one word.
One word? I don't know. No.
If you want, we can leave it by that.
I mean,
fast fashion is fast fashion, Karl Michael. Is there a lot of room to, I don't know, define it another way?
I don't think that fast fashion can be sustainable.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it won't be fast. And we all know...
I mean, you are the expert, but I would agree.
I'm also not an expert in this kind of fashion business, but if you think about the material throughput you have in this way of producing garment and whatever it is, and especially also on the social side of its production and so on, this can't work.
Yeah.
This can't work, especially not at these price points. And I think that that's also one compound in fast fashion. It must be cheap, because otherwise, again, it's not fast.
Yeah. Okay, now we come to my most favorite question statement. It's more of a statement. Climate change is only an environmental issue.
Really?
That's a myth.
That's a myth. I have to grant you this. No, not really. I was just saying that climate change is based on a biophysical process.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know it. We're emitting too much CO2 and we increase the reflectivity of our stratosphere. So this basically means we're trapping heat inside our atmosphere. That's the biophysical process. Am I allowed to say... Environmental problem.
But is it only an environmental problem?
Am I allowed to say fuck here?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you can't fuck with physics. That's the nice thing about it. Because now I just want to get this point out of the way, because normally the discussion starts here. Well, but we had this for over 8 million years and it's up and down. And so it's all natural. Yeah. It's a biophysical process. The role of CO2 in our stratosphere and the reflectivity and so on, that's a biophysical process. You can't argue with physics. I get argue is the better word than fuck with physics. So
I like to first more, but...
And if we move this out of the way, we have to ask ourselves the question, where does the CO2 come from? And obviously the answer is us.
And not the nature.
No, it's of course there are natural CO2 emissions. Yeah,
yeah,
of
but
course.
I mean,
trees die they fall down and they decompose and the CO2 is re-emitted, and we have moors and all this kind of stuff. Yeah, and I get it. Yeah,
there is a natural cycle. That's what's the point I wanted to make. Yeah,
here we're talking about slow natural systems, and the nice thing about nature is slow. Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course there are volcanic eruptions and there is a big boom and bang, sometimes there. But normally, natural, also CO2 cycles, they are slow. And with slow, I mean hundreds of years. The most volatile element is humanity. If you just think about the development we undertook after the Second World War, which is in the Northern Hemisphere, or for Europe, which is in Europe timescale, It's an important topic, because after this, all more or less nations in Europe kind of developed to kind of, let's call them, saturated economies, which is the situation in which we are in right now. So this means in a time span of 70 years and so on, we were able, with all the emissions we did, to cross, I don't have the right number in there, but 9 or 12 planetary boundaries alone in this short period of time. And yes, I know that there are natural cycles and there are sun cycles and all this kind of stuff, but these are rhythmic and very, very slow processes. And the only volatile element in the whole climate change debate is us. At an unprecedented scale, that's also the reason why the term for this new era in which we entered is the Anthropocene. It's called not called the natural scene because the plants are the bad guys. No, it's I mean, if it's not us, it must be the plants or the animals or the cows farting us to hell. But no, it's not. It's us. It's our consumption patterns. It's the patterns in which we like to live and the ways in which we like to enact our mobility.
You know, I want to bring in another perspective because when I wrote this myth, I was thinking about that when you hear the word sustainability, a lot of people only think about economic sustainability. And a lot of people think that, or I guess a lot of people think that climate change will be a problem for environment only. But I would say, as you know, I'm coming from a gender and diversity perspective, that climate change has also like big problems when you talk about societies, for example. So if I would have to discuss this myth, I would say that climate change is not only an environmental issue, but it's also a social issue, for example, and of course also an economic issue.
Of course, because the argument we started here, we're not at the end. We're here just at the causational phase of it. Mm. Why there is so much or too much CO2 in the atmosphere. The question is how this atmosphere is interacting with us again. And if we take a look about, for example, what you mentioned, the diversity or gender aspects when it comes down to climate adaptation, when we talk about, for example, summer heat or heat waves and so on, there is a classical demographic element in there because the vulnerable groups we're talking here are either very young or very old. And there is also a connex to ethnicity there, which we know from a lot of studies, for example, in Vienna and so on. So this means not are we just disproportionate, are these societal subgroups disproportionately contributing to this change? Mm. Because the more money you have, the more impact you have in general, because you have a certain lifestyle which contributes to a higher degree
of
CO2 emissions. Yeah. and also the effects are disproportionately spread. Mm. The older you are, the more affected you will be from heat waves. And heat waves are just an effect of climate change. You might not even have caused. But it's, and this is the second part of the answer. Is it just an environmental problem? No, it's not. If you take a look about what's happening near LA with the fires there.
Yeah.
We're talking here about serious disruption of regional economies. And this is the impact. So this is not just a natural phenomenon. Or think about the floods we have and so on. And the floods we are going to witness in future because the frequency and the magnitude, they are changing. They will be more frequent and the magnitude will be higher. So no, it's not just an environmental problem. I think the problem is the underlying idea behind this is a dichotomous understanding of society and nature, and to see it as two distinct elements. And I think this is a rather it's based on Aristotle and all this kind of stuff. But I think a more updated version should include how we as society use technology to interact with the environment, mm. and how the environment is going to interact with us on the technology which we have, and so on. So to cut it short, I don't think in most of the cases there is no nature anymore. It's socialized nature. So the moment we are altering the CO2 content of our atmosphere, the atmosphere becomes socialized because we use it as a dump. Mm-hmm. We use it as a dump for our excess CO2, which we don't bother and we just put it there and you don't smell it and see it and it's gone. But it's basically a dump for us. And with this, we're socializing nature. And this means that also on this more theoretical level, you see that it's not just a natural problem. We are socializing nature. And with this, we're incorporating nature in us. We have it in our lungs. So we are also hybrid objects. We are, on the one hand, we have this kind of ratio up here in our brains, which is immaterial, but we're also physical individuals. Mm-hmm. I have to breathe air into my lungs and so on. And I have a physical part of myself. So even on this individual level, you see the distinction between society and nature is kind of a rather weird one, because we, as human beings ourselves, we're an example for a hybrid object, which is on one hand immaterial societal, all the thoughts which we have, including sustainability as a regulative, as a normative perspective, but also on the material aspects which we have. I need to drink, I need to eat, I need to put energy into my body, otherwise it's not going to work. So no, it's not just an environmental problem.
Okay, Karl Michael, I would say we skip the last two myths because we're quite far in time and we could still talk for another hour, I guess. But I want to mention one sentence, one positive sentence, you know, that people that are listening have a good feeling.
Have a good feeling at the end.
If they have listened up until now, they can have one positive takeaway probably from today's podcast episode.
And this should come from me. The positive, uplifting prep talk for in the end. Regarding sustainability or life in general?
Life in general.
Life in general.
Anything positive.
Cats are cute.
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Do you have a cat?
Kind of.
Is it a mixture of a cat and a dog?
No. It's kind of a cat because we moved to a new house and our neighbors, obviously, they have cats, a black one. We called her Black Beauty, and the panther, which is a tiger cat. Mm. And they like to hang out in our house. So it's kind of, we have kind of two cats.
Because you have the most beautiful garden.
I have the most beautiful garden, and I'm now showing a picture around of my garden. Unfortunately, dear listeners, you can't see it. We have to.
We put it in our show notes.
You got me there. You got me there. But still a kind of uplifting thought on sustainability. We have to keep pushing. We have to keep pushing on transforming the way we, from producing energy to feeding ourselves to producing the goods and services which we depend on. And I think this, we have to keep pushing, but it's a very, from my perspective, it's a very demanding, but also very...
keep it positive.
The positive thing is it's also rewarding. Because it's rewarding because you see that you can put a lot of effort and put a lot of brain power in there, and also a lot of innovations, which we need, but you see that it's working. From the early successes we see from the rollout of building mounted PV in Austria and so on, we see that it's working. And we see also the positive energy and also new forms of also of collaboration. Mm-hmm. If we think about energy communities, this is a wonderful idea. People coming together to producing their own electricity and finding new ways of organizing it themselves or their lives around it. I think this is a very positive and uplifting development, although it includes a lot of work and a lot of investment and so on. But if you see it also from a business perspective, there is a lot of money to make there. A lot of investment lies ahead of us. Investment which we should direct in the right direction to transform the way we live and to make our way of living a more sustainable one. And I think if we come back to where we started, also to my role as the program director of sustainability management, this is exactly the question that we want to address with our study program of showing our students that it's demanding, but it's rewarding. it's rewarding because you definitely see the benefits you have. And these are benefits for your generation, but also for the generations to come. So this means your children.
I love this closing statement. I would say we'll leave it by that. Thank you so much for coming, Karl-Michael.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, that's it for this episode of the Sustainability Café. Thank you for your interest in sustainability at IMC Krems. You can find this and all other episodes at imcsustainabilitycafe.podigy.io. This podcast is produced by the IMC Krems Media Lab. Please send feedback and questions to sustainability@imc.ac.at. I'd love for you to check out our other episodes as well. See you soon!